Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello there, I'm JP.
Hello there, and I'm WH.
And we're back for what will be the season finale of Kenobi, although obviously we will be covering episode 5 as well before then, because we didn't get to record last week. There was a bit of issue sort of timing-wise at your end, WH, and I got COVID in between that, just to completely put paid to that. But how do we find you today?
Yeah, pretty good. As we're recording this, it's the day of Forbidden Door, or as I'm renaming this pay-per-view, that doesn't work for me, brother. Because I think we're gonna see some more people not feeling well today and not showing up for this show, which I would just find highly amusing as the late Jamal Hepburn, aka Real Hero, used to say to me in private conversations whenever things would happen in professional wrestling. I'm here for the jokes. And I have the same, philosophy about reading, wrestling news when other people think it might be like bad. Oh no, somebody's not showing up for the show because they got a fever or they got a bad knee or something. I look at it more like, do they? Are they? And then I'd be like, well, I'm here for the jokes. I'm here for the comedy of people just melting their minds over something as silly as professional wrestling. And Star Wars.
It is. Although that Star Wars community, I don't know, you'd say that they, when they get toxic, my Christ, they get toxic. And
they're scum. They are fucking scum. They really are. They're a bunch of fucking incel, misogynistic, racist, homophobic pieces of shit. I am not like that as a Star Wars fan, obviously. But like when I see like people just going after actors because they're not white, because they're gay. Mm-hmm. Because they're, not men. It drives me nuts. I hate those people. Absolutely.
Oh, God. They ruin everything. Like, they really do. They manage to turn every kind of conversation and topic of it generally to become in a toxic direction. And I say this as someone who quite routinely, on a weekly basis, will lay into whatever the professional wrestling landscape has kind of laid up on in between. I'll be doing my utmost to stay up for Forbidden Door. I know we'll be reviewing it on Spotlight. To say I'm intrigued more than anything else, I'm just curious to see how this show looks and feels.
I will say this. I think I said this on Post Perez. I think the build's been terrible on paper. It's a very disappointing looking show. But as I watch it, I'll probably enjoy what I see.
Oh, yeah.
So, I think it'll be a good match. I'd be a good show in-ring-wise.
Yeah.
But I'm also going to be eating kebabs. So what the fuck do I care if it's good or bad?
Yeah, you're having a proper feast, aren't you?
That's right. I'm going to Mike Murray's house, and we're having he's having other people over. We're going to, people I know, so that's good. We hang out with, Queen of the C-Block, one of his daughters, his other daughter. Yeah. It'll be fun.
I nicknamed her Pauline Heyman the time when she was in the G1 Pick'em contest.
Really?
As just like this kind of like booking prodigy that Mike has.
Yes. Good old Vivian. That's right. Be seeing them, his kids. So that's good. And we're going to get fed barbecue. He's very good, griller, so there you go. Well, but that's AEW. And I'm sure I'll look forward to your review and John Way's review. And then just if you want to hear my thoughts, I'll be on Twitter just laughing probably.
Oh, yeah. And you'll be there for that. But today we're going to be going into we're going to be going back to Kenobi, because like I say, we've had a week off. So it feels like we have to go into episode 5.
Oh, by the way, sorry, before regarding your COVID, I got a message from Japan from one Mr. Fujita. He says, hello there.
Yeah. The irony isn't lost on me as well. I thought, there's a lad in a sort of Chairman Mao cap sat there pouring beer over his head, having a good giggle at me getting COVID. And fair play. He can do. Really wiped me out. It's the first time having it and just finding myself sleeping for a week. So My aim is I've got to go to my girlfriend's father's wedding on Thursday, so I'm hoping I'm all right for that. And then I'm off to Turkey on the 9th, so I'm really hoping they're like... There isn't any long-term effects, but I won't be doing too much other than sunbathing.
Well, sorry, if you don't mind me asking, how old is your girlfriend's father?
Oh, he's like 60.
Oh,
so
he's
like
getting married again?
He's getting married again. Wow, three times a charm.
Third time. Tremendous. I would have given up after the second, to be quite honest, and just let's just live together.
I haven't even bothered with the first one. Just been living in sin my entire life.
No, that's good. That's good. Yeah.
Rather like, I imagine, Owen and Aunt Beru, but we'll get on to them later on as well. Did they get married? So, yeah, we're going to go on to episode 5, first of all. Talk about that episode. We'll go through it a lot quicker. We'll be going into a ton of detail on there as well. But where we start off with on this episode is with it followed the escape from the... Fortress Inquisitorius, from episode 4. However, there's a tracking device on Leia's droid, and where we end up first of all in Jabim, where you've got all the representatives of the path, plus what looks like a kind of like displaced refugee community who are there, and everyone's had to wait in order for Obi-Wan to come back with Leia, but like they're basically decide, you know, having to kind of hold off on there. However, part of the problem is that the droid manages to go in and cuts the roof doors off, and you know, they realize, well, what are they going to be able to do, because they've got the Empire outside, they've got Darth Vader on the case on here as well, and we end up with Obi-Wan kind of confronting Reva with a kind of negotiation from behind closed doors, where we actually have it revealed to us that, as we knew all along, she was a youngling during Order 66, and she was in the Jedi Temple on Coruscant, and she was one of the kids who was getting hacked to pieces, but somehow survives, which is a...
Well, she got stabbed, which apparently, and if you get stabbed with a lightsaber, it's not necessarily going to kill you, because... I don't know how many people have survived a stabbing with a lightsaber. If you cut off her head, that's what he should have done. Huh?
Like through your body.
Yeah. Yeah.
Out the other end.
Now, think about this, like twice. Yeah. She got stabbed twice through the body by Darth Vader. Once as Anakin Skywalker, well, you know, as Anakin and then as Darth Vader. And she survived both times. Like, yeah, I mean, I talk about like the messy writing and the stupid continuity errors that you have, and just things that do not make sense at all about this particular episode. But that's like, to me, is so egregiously stupid. Like, unless you reveal that she's not actually human, but that she's like part, she looks human on the outside, but actually her internal organs shift or something like that. She's part of a species that shifts their organs or something like that. And so,
or she's been modded a la Book of Boba Fett.
Oh God, yeah. Please no. Not
we'll
that.
Hope never to mention that ever again.
I hate those fucking people, the fucking mods. Worst concept since fucking Jar Jar Binks, to be honest with you.
It was like they brought in the cast of the other Disney Plus show that's ongoing, Pistol, and decided to throw them onto Tatooine, didn't they?
Anyways, but yeah, go ahead. But that doesn't make any sense. Let me just get that away. Her getting stabbed twice. Once as a kid, once as an adult, and surviving both times makes no sense by the same fucking person who's like who's a master Jedi and, you know, Sith Lord. Come on.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get round to that. We're not spoiling it for anyone on there. We get to that scene, which can only be described as an absolute squash match, if ever there was one, to go into wrestling parlance as well. But one of the things that obviously she realizes there as well is that, in fact, what he's doing is he's effectively biding time, and she's bringing sort of Vader to him effectively. So this is hopefully going to be used as a distraction in order to get everyone off all of the people off the planet, off Jabim there as well. What we do get though is, when Reva manages to get through the door, There is a big kind of, you know, big firefight that takes place. And Tala, eventually, she takes a blaster bolt to the gut and then seals Obi-Wan behind the next door and lets off a thermal detonator, sort of a la Aliens, as I like to think of one of the classic examples of that kind of self-sacrifice on there. And yes, Tala is killed at that point in time. However, within the plot, it becomes sort of a little bit pointless, doesn't it? Because effectively, Obi-Wan still has to kind of give himself up in order for this to work. So it felt like one of those issues when you talk about the writing on this, you're like, okay, you haven't really quite thought through the kind of machinations taken for this, because you've just kind of had the character killed off because you're always going to have her killed off. And at the same time, he still finds himself having to kind of surrender in order to buy time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, it doesn't make any sense for the way this story is structured. It's negotiate, attack, Tala sacrifices herself. And my thing is like, why don't you just throw a bunch of thermal detonators into that hallway?
Oh.
And then close the door. Like if you're the path, you know, if you're members of this refugee resistance, that just throw things into there or booby trap it for some reason. And then she lets him go. And then she lets him go back into the bunker.
Yeah.
With two stormtroopers. It's like, but why? It's like, he's going to kill them. You know, yeah. He's going to escape. He's fucking Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's just so dumb. Okay, so let's just finish the synopsis and I'll just rip it apart.
Well, I'm feeling like I'm gonna dive through this as quickly as possible on there as well. I mean, because he tries to turn her as well, doesn't he? I mean, he tries to turn Reva, and let's just face it, he's successful at it as well. And obviously, it's, you know, which is something that Darth Vader himself makes reference to it, but. When Vader gets there in person, by which point Obi-Wan, as he said, he's broken free. And Leia's managed to remove the tracking device from Lola the droid. The doors are open. The ship goes off. And I think this is probably like, you know, the highlight scene is Vader straight away like, no, fuck that. Starts to pull it back down and then rips chunks from it. However, it was all a trick. Another ship sort of sets off behind it, a little bit more quick, more nimble, and the path end up escaping. Which, by the way, was sort of meant to be the point of the mission, but we'll get into that with the final episode as well, and sort of Darth Vader's obsession. But yeah, however, the one thing that is left behind is from Haja, which is Obi-Wan's communicator, which contains a message from Bail Organa about the children and mention of Tatooine and Ben. And then this leads up to Reva taking the opportunity to attack Vader and basically being squashed a la Sid Vicious in WCW in like 89, 90. Doesn't even take out his own lightsaber here. It's just a ass kicking from beginning to end, messing with her as well. I mean, was it like a kind of Grand Inquisitor? Because we saw the Grand Inquisitor use this same lightsaber before.
It's the lightsaber design used by all Inquisitors.
By all of the Inquisitors. For that. Yeah, for the Inquisiting. But yes, he also reveals that he knows that this was going to happen all along here, and that he basically, he was using this in order to be able to get to Obi-Wan. And also, so does the original Grand Inquisitor. So we have canon being respected here.
That's right.
He is coming back.
He also survived a stabbing.
Yeah, straight through. But it was fine. It's the kind of thing, it feels like it'll lay you out for a couple of weeks. Maybe like this bout of COVID. So it'll be like, you'll be gone for a week, but then fundamentally afterwards, once you've been stabbed through the belly, you're fine. On there,
well, he's an alien, so who knows where his internal organs are placed in his body. So it could be, you know, his species can survive a stabbing. oh, given time and not necessarily kill them. Like, Reva's human. I don't know how she survived two. One is a child, one is an adult. But you're just actually, she finds the communicator after Vader has kicked her ass. Actually, and it doesn't mention Ben. It mentions reference to Owen. So that's how she knows, because she met Owen in the first episode. So then she knows, oh, there's a child. Oh, she's putting two together. It's probably Anakin Skywalker's child that he doesn't know about. And she's going to go over there. But yeah, synopsis is done.
Time I think that's pretty much it. Rip it to pieces, mate. Crack on.
Okay, I had a lot of problems with episode four, just like the kind of how the Empire looked like complete idiots, letting Obi-Wan and Tala get in, like having Tala be able to let him in so easily, like with like so many things that would make anyone suspicious. I don't care what her ranking in the Empire was. We talked about that in episode review, but this episode was so fucking bad in terms of like how clumsy it was and how lazy it was with the writing. I can't fault really the performances. I think Ewan McGregor was fine in this. I think, you know, Leia was great as usual. Everyone did their best with the material that they're given. But I really wonder like where the continuity cops are, not just like Dave Filoni or Jon Favreau, but where are you, Kiri Hard and Carrie Beck, people like that. If you follow the cartoons, they help produce a lot of the cartoons and have some involvement, I think, with The Mandalorian as well. So that's why I think with someone like Filoni and other people in charge that are from the cartoons, you have really tight continuity and solid writing and not so many errors like this one has. So Reva gets stabbed twice. Vader has always known that she was that youngling and just used. Yeah, I mean, I can understand like your rage was useful to a point, but she basically, you know, like I suppose like one thing I didn't like about this reveal was that you could have explored more about this idea of like she became what she hated in order to get her revenge. But again, I thought what was once a promising character in this episode just became cookie cutter, like I want revenge, so I'm going to become bad to go undercover, but I became what I hated. Da, 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 da. I just thought it was really clumsy, and I just thought it was what a shame for a character that I liked at the beginning of the series.
She became a plot device
at
that point. And that's one of the worst things you can have really with any characters, I think, in an episodic TV program, where they are there to move the machinations of the plot along. And rather than sort of like becoming characters in their own right. Now, I think there is a lot more they do in the final episode, which kind of wins things back in, you know, and is better for it. But yeah, in this episode, it was very much like, how are we going to get to this kind of reveal? It felt like an inevitability that we were going to have this scene. And it's down to the writing.
And
the construction of the episodes as well.
Yeah. And I don't understand, like, so she Vader knows he's on Jabim.
Yeah.
Knows that Obi-Wan's on Jabim. So he sends her to go to flush him out. Why? He's the one who wants him more than she wants him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wants Obi-Wan. He wants to find him. He wants to punish him. He wants to kill him. Why doesn't he go instead of her to the planet? And then you have this whole sequence in the middle of the episode where the Empire can't break through these doors. They're shooting at it and it's taking a long time. But then later on, we see Reva use her lightsaber to cut through the door. Why didn't she just do that in the first place? Like, this whole episode contradicts itself ridiculously. Then Vader arrives and he's just like using the Force to open the fucking doors. Why did he just show up and do that? It's the same. Like, it makes no sense. It's a contrivance to flesh out this episode. And that to me is like, when you rely on contrivances, it's lazy writing, and it makes no sense. And I'm going to have to respectfully disagree with you, JP. You said the highlight was Vader holding back the shuttle using the Force. I think that was a low light, because you have now made Vader OP, like overpowered. And okay, he did that in this episode. He held that shuttle back, which was going at full thrust, trying to get out of there, right?
Yeah.
Why the fuck didn't he do that in Empire Strikes Back with the Millennium Falcon on Hoth?
It's a fair shout.
It doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, I can, like, a lot of people have criticisms about episode, I guess, episode 3 with the fire stuff. Like, whoa, why did he, the second, when Tala lit the things on fire and helped Obi-Wan escape, why didn't he just walk through the fire? Well, listen, he was traumatized by fire. Like, you know, it's one thing he creates the fire himself to drag Obi-Wan through it. That's one thing. But someone else creates the fire and, like, that's the barrier now between him and Obi-Wan. No, then I can see him hesitating, not wanting to go through, because he was burned. He burned to a crisp, you know, like after Obi-Wan cut off his legs. Like, I can imagine fire is something like that doesn't, not too, even all armored up, he's not too keen on like going to experience again, right? This overpowered of like using the force like that, it's something I actually hate. I think you have to create some limitations on how the force is used, right? Otherwise, how can you stop anyone who knows how to use the force? Like Yoda, when he says size doesn't matter, and he lifts Luke's X-Wing fighter out of the swamp of Dagobah, he is exerting a lot of willpower to do that. Like, it's obvious, like, in that the way that scene is shot, that anytime Yoda uses his immense, you know, mastery of the force, it takes a lot of willpower on his part. It takes a lot of effort on his part. He can do it, but it's not easy. And I think that's what something you should use. Someone using the force like that, it should drain them. It should make them feel tired. Vader doesn't make him feel tired. He just then starts using the force to like just toy with Reva. She's trying to kill him using her lightsaber.
Yeah, plenty of energy there.
One thing I did like about that scene, like, was that he never takes out his own lightsaber. He just uses the force to block her parries and slashes. And there's a great scene where he splits her lightsaber in half, and he has them at one point. He's gonna, like, he looks like he's gonna recreate the scene from Revenge of the Sith, when as Anakin Skywalker, he has lightsabers and he cuts off Christopher Lee's head, right? All we needed was like Emperor Palpatine in the background saying, "Do it," right? That's all we were missing from that. Yeah. But again, it's just, I was so angry, honestly. Like, maybe when I finished this episode, I was just like, oh my God, all the investment I put into this series up until episode 4 was just like flushed down toilet for me. Like, after watching episode 5, it was so bad.
Thank God we didn't do an episode 5 show. We'll run everyone off.
We'll talk about episode 6. It, you know, in many ways, it redeems itself, that episode. But I will say this: if I ever watch this again, I will probably never watch episode 5 of this series ever again. Just because I watched a bit of it this morning to prepare for this, and not all of it, but just parts of it. And I was just like, oh, terrible. I would like try to erase episode 5 from my memory.
Oh well, We'll move past it then in that case, mate, because I feel worried. I don't want you to be too traumatized from it. But like I said, I mean, I think there's a lot of things when it comes to the kind of plot machinations and the contrivances that you mentioned as well, which is a thing that's a lot in that episode as well. As well as the things where, why would Darth Vader not kill Reva, really, at that point? There's nothing to be gained by keeping her alive, even sort of simple character motivations and things like that. But we'll go on to episode 6. Which starts off with a small ship, which is transporting Obi-Wan, Leia, and all of the rest of the other people who've escaped from Jabim. And he's being chased down by Vader's Star Destroyer. And the hyperdrive doesn't work, and time is running out. Roken tries, O'Shea Jackson Jr., tries to calm down everyone and tells them that the repair's being done. But Obi-Wan knows that they're not going to be escaping anytime soon. So he comes up with a plan, and he is effectively going to be drawing the enemy away. Roken isn't a fan of it, but he knows it's the only one where they're going to be able to do to be able to escape. And Leia gets mad when she hears this plan. And, you know, it says a lot on here about the kind of relationship that they've built up, about like why she's worried about him. And, you know, she knows that he cares about her, very much like another kind of parental figure for her, as much as anything else. I mean, obviously, she names her son after Ben Kenobi there as well at the same time. And then obviously Haja's able to help her calm down. Obi-Wan gives her Tala's holster, which is, you know,
miraculously survived. Miraculously survived being a thermal detonator blast. Basically a thermal detonator, for people who don't know, is a grenade. It's an incendiary grenade that burns as well as creates concussive force. Like, if this thing was nearly pristine, it maybe had a little bit of Tala's blood on it, which is, I don't know why you're giving that to a 10-year-old kid, but okay. But it's pristine. There's not damage at all. Come on.
It's a serious form of leather that she's got there, isn't it?
You couldn't just like have a scene where Tala gives it to her before she goes to save Obi-Wan. Like, you know, stop.
But what did you feel about the kind of opening and the setup for this?
I thought, again, this is so stupid. They're being chased. This is a fucking shuttlecraft. It's not even a military vehicle. And it's being chased by a fucking Star Destroyer. Shooting at it. Are you telling me the turbo lasers on a fucking Star Destroyer can't penetrate the shields of a cargo ship? I don't care if they modified it or not. This is ridiculous. Then, here's the other theme of this show. Where are the fucking TIE fighters? Why are they launching a squadron of TIE fighters to disable this ship? I know they don't want to destroy it, but like and every Star Destroyer has a fucking tractor beam on it. Why don't you just engage the tractor beam on this fucking ship? It's ridiculous. It's like, if it was one thing, if it's a Millennium Falcon, that thing's, excuse me.
Oh, it's all right, mate. I've been like that
all week. It's not COVID. I hope. It's one thing. It's Millennium Falcon, the fastest ship in the galaxy, modded beyond belief by Han Solo and Chewbacca. This is a transport ship. No one mentions any reference to say that it's nothing more than a transport ship. And it can run a Star Destroyer. It can deflect most of the disabling blasts of its turbo lasers. No TIE fighters are sent out to get it. And, you know, if Vader is in relatively close proximity to it, I suppose, enough, why didn't he just use the Force to stop it? He did it in the fucking base, right? This beginning, I was like getting worried, JP. I was like, oh my God, it's going to be as bad as fucking episode 5. But I was not happy with like the kind of like the glaring contrivances once again of like having this, you know, this artificial drama created by the situation of them going to be soon to be taken over, overrun by and overtaken by the Star Destroyer. It should have already happened. Like,
yeah,
these are some of the most advanced, you know, starships in Star Wars canon. Like, yet they can't defeat a lone unmodified transport. Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, that's just very disappointing to start with this episode.
My issue was okay, can they not do two things simultaneously? Okay, Obi-Wan's gone over there. All right, I'm gonna get in my ship and I'm gonna fly after him. We'll have a couple of TIE fighters come along with me. You guys chase these guys down and have them all arrested. Rather, no, we're going after Obi-Wan. We're just gonna have to leave them go. It's like, I'm sure we can walk and chew gum at the same time on this one. It's not like it's all being held down to him. So that was my issue with that. However, what we end up getting, and then in this as well, is we have a rematch, and the money's always in the chase, between Darth Vader and Obi-Wan, because Darth Vader at this point follows Anakin down. What's the name of the planet that they've arrived on?
I forget. Obi-Wan episode 6.
I'm just checking myself and I can't think of it. But what we've got here at this point is a different Obi-Wan. He's gone through the Rocky regime. We haven't had a training montage in that time as well. But what you are not going to get this time is the annihilation that happened first time round, where he was all over the place and has to be rescued by Tala. Opens up with two very important lines. I will do what I must, then you will die. Because if you've heard these before, this is the same thing that Obi-Wan says to Anakin when he meets him on Mustafar in Revenge of the Sith as well. And the second one, that was a line said from Vader to Ahsoka Tano in the Twilight of the Apprentice episode of Star Wars Rebels. So a couple of early throwbacks on there as well. We do get Obi-Wan in his signature pose with yes. two fingers pointing towards there as the other hand holds the lightsaber above his head in a scorpion style pose on there. And they completely go at it. And it's a lot more of a fair fight. I don't know, where does this rank for you in lightsaber battle history? Because this is
pretty good.
This one.
This one's pretty good. Emotionally, it's up there. Because of like here the writing is good. Like I like the callbacks to, like as you mentioned, Twilight of the Apprentice, where Ahsoka finally meets Anakin again, but as Darth Vader. And that's like one of the most emotional, like written things in Star Wars history. And I really urge people, if you love Star Wars, you've never watched Rebels, you're doing yourself a disservice. That is probably one of the greatest things ever to come out of the expanded universe. Like that is actually canon still. One of those is the inclusion of Ahsoka Tano as a supporting character for a short time, especially in most of season two. And spoilers. There's a confrontation in the last two episodes called it's a two-parter called Twilight of the Apprentice. And it's the confrontation between Vader and Ahsoka. And there is a great scene that mirrors what happens in this episode between Obi-Wan and Vader, but on the other side of Vader's face. So like here, it's the left side, I believe, of Vader's face that Obi-Wan strikes down and gives him the scar that you see on his head in Return of the Jedi. So that's where that scar comes from. Because we don't see that scar when we see earlier unmasked representations of Anakin being put. So that's from Obi-Wan. But in Twilight Apprentice, Ahsoka battles Vader to save one of the main characters, Ezra Bridger, who's a Jedi. She charges at him and strikes his mask and hits the right side of his face, I believe. And it's the similar effect of you see half of Anakin's face and there's a mixing of the voice of Anakin Skywalker here, played by Hayden Christensen, there, played by the voice actor, I think Matt Lautner. And it's a very, very emotional effect. And, you know, like in Twilight Apprentice, he says, Anakin Skywalker was weak and I destroyed him. That's at the beginning when they first meet, like in full Vader voice. And then she strikes him. She's about to escape because they're in this Sith temple that's closing its doors. And like Ezra and Kanan are going to escape. And they're like, Ahsoka, come on. She's going to leave Vader behind. But then he calls out to her in a mix of James Earl Jones's voice, who does the voice in Rebels of Darth Vader, as he does here, and a mix of Matt Lautner's voice, Ahsoka. And then she stops and she can't go. Because it's Anakin. And then he has this great line. She says, I won't leave you again. Then he just looks at her, big dramatic pause. And he says to her, then you will die. And it's great. And it just kills me every time I rewatch that episode. It just gets to me. I love that episode.
Well, as you know, I haven't seen Rebels. And I need to get in on this now.
That is one of the most emotional scenes in all of Star Wars history. But this is great because one, it's really amazingly choreographed, I feel, and shot this lightsaber duel between them. But like there's the point where he buries, like, you know, Vader crushes the ground using the force and creates kind of like the cave-in of the ground. And Obi-Wan falls in there and he's going to bury him alive. That's how he decides, I'm going to get rid of him. I'm going to bury him alive. I think to me, it's like he realizes he can't beat him in a lightsaber duel. Right? Like he can't, like he says, I'm going to do this. This is how I'm going to kill him because he has a very good chance of defeating me in a straight up lightsaber duel. And then this is where, you know, Obi-Wan gets he's trying to figure out throughout this episode, he's racked by guilt by what he did to Anakin. And then now with the idea that, oh my God, he's still alive. And I created this Darth Vader. This cyborg that is like, you know, has been killing Jedi that have, you know, scattered throughout the galaxy post Order 66. And so, but then he realizes like, oh, I now have a purpose as a Jedi Knight again. I have to protect the children of Anakin. He has flashbacks of Luke. He has flashbacks of his time with Leia. And he thinks, I have to survive for them. I have to protect them. This is where he fully, I feel he fully reintegrates his connection to the Force.
Yeah.
And he escapes, and then he goes back to battle Vader again. Another, you know, great sequence of lightsaber, you know, counters and parries. And then, like, the best, like, to me, and this is quite opposite of Vader holding the shuttle back, you know, Obi-Wan channels his use of the Force to lift up a multitude of rocks, of big, large-sized rocks, not super boulders or anything like that. These are all, like, big rocks, and there's a lot of them. But I feel like a guy with, like, his skill in using the Force can do it with effort. He's using a lot of effort to do this, and you can tell. And he hurls all, it's a great scene. He hurls all this shit ever at Vader. And this is what gives him the advantage to finally, like, just run at him, slash his helmet, cuts. Again, I can't remember if it's the left side or the right side of Vader.
It's the left side of his, it's Anakin's, Darth Vader's left.
It's his left, right? So, and this is where we get the mix of like, he sees his face and what he's become. He can see, like, the scarring from the flames. And he's just, and it kills him. It kills Obi-Wan. And Ewan McGregor, look on his face. It killed me. I was watching. I was like, oh my God. I felt it. Like, he says, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for everything. The quivering you see on his face. Amazing. Amazing performance, Ewan McGregor. Still the best thing to come out of the prequels is Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi. Fucking amazing. And then, yeah, Hayden Christensen. Oh my God. He goes, I think one of the greatest lines ever in any Star Wars property that's canon. I am not your failure, Obi-Wan. And then that when he says Obi-Wan, it's James Earl Jones's voice.
Yeah.
That's just amazing. That's just a great touch. And then he says, I think such a great line. You didn't kill Anakin Skywalker. And then pause, smile. He's fucking smiling. He says, I did. And then the lighting, the way the blue lightsaber representing the light side of the Force, it illuminates Obi-Wan's face and it starts to flicker out. Cause, like, he's, you know, his hope is for Anakin is finally extinguished in this scene. But then Anakin's face fully lit up by the red lightsaber to represent the dark side of the Force, that he is fully more than ever from before. He is fully, you know, it's realized by everyone. Not just Obi-Wan, but everyone watching this, he's gone from this point until Return of the Jedi, when he kills Palpatine. He's gone. He's Sith Lord, right? So it's great. I think this lightsaber battle, you know, redeems a lot of the bad. Like, I'll never watch Episode 5 again of this series. I'll just skip to this part, right? I'll just watch this lightsaber battle, which is amazing. I would say it's in my top three of lightsaber battles. Like, for me, it maybe edges out Twilight of the Apprentice a bit. But if you want to know, my favorite is Empire Strikes Back between Luke and Vader on Cloud City. That's the best one. It's so good. Number two, like, just for the sheer, I love the battle between Obi-Wan Kenobi and Darth Maul in The Phantom Menace. I think it's so good. The way it's choreographed. Ray Park is amazing as Darth Maul in that scene. And Ewan McGregor, the training he did to be able to match trained martial artists in that scene is great. This might be number three. Number four would be the rematch between Darth Maul and Obi-Wan Kenobi in Twin Suns, which is in season four of Rebels. And that, if you love the character of Obi-Wan Kenobi, you should watch this episode of Rebels. It is amazing. It's like, without saying anything, there's a part in that duel where Obi-Wan does this thing, changes his stance, and you realize, oh my God, as he gets older, he's just gotten better as a master of using a lightsaber. Anyways, go watch it. It's amazing. Even just watch the clip on YouTube. Oh my God, it's so good.
I haven't seen the interactions with Obi-Wan and Darth Maul from Clone Wars, and you know, and Sauvage Opress as well. Like, I'm kind of like, oh, okay, I can get on board with that. Yeah. No love for Yoda versus Count Dooku then.
Yoda versus Palpatine from Revenge of the Sith is better than that. But hey, listen, when I saw Attack of the Clones and he pops out that fucking lightsaber, Yoda, I fucking popped. Like,
oh yeah.
It was I was like, we're gonna see Yoda in a lightsaber battle. Holy shit. And I was not disappointed. I thought
cinema popped when I went to see it.
That's a great one. Darth Sidious versus Darth Maul and Savage Opress. Have you seen that, JP?
From Clone Wars.
Clone Wars, where where you realize, well, why doesn't Vader just take out Palpatine? It's because he's a badass with a lightsaber too. Like Palpatine, as powerful as Vader is, you have to understand Darth Sidious is like fucking like 10 levels above. He's like 10 levels above Vader in terms of power, sheer power. Also, maybe possibly as a lightsaber duelist, like. There is a point where, you know, like he almost gets beat by Mace Windu and by, you know, Yoda. But he takes out two pretty fearsome lightsaber duelists and Darth Maul and Savage Opress in Clone Wars. And it is one of the best shot fights ever. And it's great. Ahsoka, a lot of Ahsoka things. Like I think, yeah, we should just do an episode just talking about all the how great Ahsoka is. You know, I love Ahsoka Tano. I hated her when she first appeared. Two tops on a kid as a Jedi. No, that doesn't work for me. It's stupid. But as she grew and her gear got better, fully on board with Ahsoka.
I had kid sidekick throughout this. And I was a bit like, the skepticism is strong in me.
No, but it was a tube top. Why is a Jedi wearing a tube top? It's dumb. Anyway. Yeah.
But they sorted all of that out. But I mean, I have to say, I echo a lot of your thoughts. I think it's generally like an absolutely tremendous sequence. I mean, for me, it'd be the kind of highlight of the episode as well, because it feels like something that should be sitting within the serious canon of like a kind of big battle between them as well. And at the end of it, when Obi-Wan, who doesn't kill him, who walks away saying, says to him, goodbye, Darth, which then I think nicely sets up how Alec Guinness in A New Hope would have reacted, that he knows by the time he's seeing Darth Vader, he's not overcome with emotion, because what he sees there is Darth Vader. It's not his former friend. His former friend is dead.
Yeah. And he just refers to him by his title. He doesn't call him Vader, because that's the continuity error people like would say, well, it's the title. Why did you call him Darth? It's not his first name. It's because he has reduced him to his title. It's like calling somebody doctor or captain.
Yeah.
It's like, and not personalizing them at all. He's reduced him to being the Sith Lord. And the title most Sith Lords use is Darth. That's like the prefix to their Sith name. So that's what he calls him. That's what he thinks of him as, is a Darth, is a Sith. So that really makes a lot of sense. He'll never refer to him as Anakin ever again. It's always going to be, or even Vader. He's just reduced him even further in his mind to Darth, to Sith.
Well, that's not the only thing that's going on here. So we have this, and this takes up like kind of like a large chunk of time. But what we do then get is effectively what is Reva on Tatooine. We see Owen and
Beru.
And Beru, that was it. And we see like them realizing that, you know, they get warned. The person who's Inquisitor asking them from before is back, so they're going to defend the homestead. It seems like a forlorn battle. However, what you see from them is that kind of real kind of grit and determination that, you know, they're not going to be giving up Luke without any kind of a fight at all. And it's interesting because I think they've like. I thought the whole series was going to be a lot of Joel Edgerton as Owen, but we don't get as much of that. In fact, within this, we only kind of get really what amounts to sort of what, less than 10 minutes or so of actual sort of screen time them for them. But yes, they turn up. Reva is there. She's going to be kind of completing, you know, her mission of taking out Luke. they know that they're not really going to be able to defeat them. He manages to punch Reva where she's been stabbed, just indicating that there is some sort of wound from there. I don't know if you should be walking after that on there as well. And then Luke, he tells Luke earlier on to run, which he does as he runs off into the desert there around. What did you feel of like kind of this sequence leading up to what is effectively Reva's kind of final battle with herself?
At this point, I've given up on Reva as being an interesting character, because like you said, she's a plot point and she's, yeah, that's all she is at this point as well. It's like, it's just so heavy handed. She sees herself. She sees Luke, yeah, there. Then she projects an image of her younger self after being stabbed by Anakin Skywalker, Darth Vader, and that she survives, and that's what stops her. And I understand, like, oh, it's, you know, mercy. This whole idea of mercy doesn't make you weak; it makes you strong. You not killing him honors your friends who you wanted to get revenge for, which is not the Jedi way, you know. But again, this whole character, the way she was been used since episode three on, like, she's fine. Episode four on, it's not so, kind of weak. It's just gone all downhill, this character, for me. So I really didn't like it. For me, the highlights of anything involving the Tatooine sequence was the interaction Owen, Beru, and Luke have.
Yeah.
Because that's, to me, interesting. To me, like, seeing, like, how much Owen loves Luke as his son. He thinks of him, like, that's a great line. You protect, like Reva says to him, you protect him like he's your own. He goes, he is my own. He doesn't think of him as his adopted son or his nephew. He thinks of him, this is my son. And also, even though she's not given really anything to say, you can tell, like, and I applaud the actress who plays Emperor in the sense, because, like, you can tell in her body language and her facial expressions that she loves Luke. Luke is her son. They don't have any of their own kids, like biological kids. They just have Luke. And he means so much to them that they're willing to sacrifice their lives to give him maybe no chance of surviving in the long run, but any chance of having the slightest glimmer of hope. And I think that's so amazing to see things like that on screen. Like, the love, like, parental figures have for kids is just, for me, it's a wonderful thing to see. Yeah. So I like that stuff a lot. I love the determination that they had to stop Reva to protect Luke. But Reva herself is just, like, it just rank false, because I just feel they reduced her to being a caricature of a real character. Like, and I think there was a lot of potential in her, and they want to do a spinoff. I'll give it a chance, but at this moment, JP, I have no idea how you can make her interesting ever again.
Yeah. I have a whole plot line. I mean, and I think you hit the nail on the head here with it. This is, I kind of feel everything is building to the point of her being able to kind of kill one of Leia or Luke, and is not able to do with it, and has to confront the idea of her being a youngling. But that was all very, this is set out. If you're watching a diet of kind of high quality dramas, you can tell what these, like, kind of plot points and these plot beats are there for. You can see what is clearly, oh, this is meant to explain kind of character motivation. And I think that's where they kind of fell down. This is down to writing and portrayal. Like, and as a result, she's a cipher rather than a kind of real character within her own right. What they do as a spin-off, I don't know. There's a part of me with some sort of idea of a Asajj Ventress style adventures in bounty hunting, but I don't know whether or not we would, you know, is that a route that they would want to go down? And particularly when I look at the kind of expanded universe of interesting characters, they're primarily of the sort of Dave Filoni range. You just think the amount of characters you could have there that would be phenomenal.
You know, it's also getting crowded, that, you know,
it is
between episode 3 and episode 4. Like, just say like we'll count this as its own kind of 3.5 or yeah. 3.4 or something like that. Like Rogue One is like a, you know, 3.9 because it leads right into New Hope. But with the Andor series going to be set before Rogue One, that whole timeline is getting, I think, a little bit muddy. We also have the Solo film, which, by the way, I like that film. I like Solo. A lot of people don't like it. I think it's fun. I think I forget the guy's name who plays Han in there, but he's fine. He's okay. Like He was okay.
I think it's more you can tell the production history stuff. You can see as much, I think, as much in the edit. Now, you can get in your kind of master craftsman in Ron Howard to come in and kind of like save the day. But I think ultimately you're still saving things that are kind of not quite agreed on and a little bit broken. That was my thoughts on Solo. Have I seen worse? God, yes.
Yeah. I've seen worse in the canon of Star Wars.
I was going to say.
So, yeah. But again, I can't imagine that she's going to have her own movie. I don't think they'll spend money on a movie. Like, if I can't even see her starring in her own series. I can see her being part of some kind of an ensemble story, maybe in the future, including maybe we'll get Quinlan Voss then in something like that, or who knows, and Asajj Ventress in live action.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, I'm okay if they like, I know they want to do maybe another series of Obi-Wan. And here's the thing, leave Vader out of it.
Yeah.
Don't make it about saving Luke or anything like that anymore. Obviously Luke has met Ben, I think. And then we get that nice scene where he goes to visit Leia on Alderaan one more time to let her know, give her Lola back.
Yeah.
Because she puts Lola in his robe, right? When he leaves the shuttle to go confront Vader, he brings it back to her. And then they just have a great exchange where he tells her about Padme and Anakin. And this kind of, for me, fills in the plot hole of Return of the Jedi, where Luke asks her, what was your real mother like? And she has memory. Well, you're both there. Like, you don't remember anything about Padme. But Obi-Wan tells her, this is what your mother was like, you know? And I think, you know, someone made a point on you, like on a YouTube video, she's 10. Like when we're kids, a lot of our memories blend in. And I think, you know, like maybe she heard some other stories, or maybe Bail told, you know, I forget the name of Bail's wife, Leia's mom, they're talking about, maybe they talked about Padme because he was there on that moon when she gave birth. He was there, right? So he knows like how she felt, like, so like maybe he talked about it and she overheard it. And so like this becomes her memories, like what she heard about her mother becomes her own memories of her mother. And this is what she's telling Luke in Revenge of the Sith, because he's never had anything like that, you know. And again, like, I don't know if I've already said it on with you, JP, but one thing I would love to see is like, you know, like a cartoon maybe of Luke and Leia going to Naboo. Oh, okay, our father was Anakin Skywalker. Our mother was, you know, Padme Amidala. She's from the planet Naboo. And then they go research the archives of, because she was a queen of Naboo, which means she was like the political leader. That's how they call their
political. Yeah, it was an elected monarchy.
Yeah, an elected monarchy, right? It's Star Wars. So like queen and kings aren't necessarily hereditary or anything. Like they're elected positions, like a president is or something like that. We never hear the phrase
like both
president.
Us citizens of the Commonwealth.
So, yeah. like so we hear, you know, the phrase.
You've taken queen... down all your Union Jack bunting in the background there that you hand up for the Queen's Jubilee there.
Great old Liz. I love Liz there. You know, she's fantastic. Can't wait till Charles takes over as king. You know,
oh yeah,
it'd be tremendous. But yeah, then we go to Obi-Wan returning to Tatooine. He's gonna move out of his cave. Mm-hmm. And he's going to set up shop deeper into the Dune Sea with like the hut we see in A New Hope that he takes Luke to. And before he does that, he stops by the Lars farm and, you know, just tells Owen, I'm going to keep my distance from Luke. Don't worry. But you know, Owen's like grateful. So says, do you want to meet him? And then he has the Skyhopper toy that Luke plays with in New Hope as even as an 18-year-old kid. And then he says, hello there. It's great. Fantastic.
Oh, it will be, and that will be the closing sound clip for this, because it kind of really has to be there for it. But it's, I was so happy. I smiled for obvious reasons, given that we're hosting it on here as well. I mean, I think you mentioned with these sequences, and also the one with Darth Vader speaking to the Emperor as well, and the Emperor sort of recognizing that he's kind of disturbed, is what we did get here. And I did kind of like it. It's some nice resolution to this kind of period of time, which is why, if you're doing a second series, and I can get the idea of why they would want to do it and what the enthusiasm would be. It's just, you know, they have tied things up pretty neatly in a lot of ways. If they decided not to go back to this period of time as well, there's a you know, you mentioned about the toy on there, the fact that Leia looks pretty similar to how she is in A New Hope as well, with the kind of the hairstyle from there, along with the kind of like with the, it's a white dress, but she's got like a kind of cowboy boots on. Well, they're not cowboy boots, but fancy leather boots that she's got on there. There's some really nice kind of, you know, nice resolution, I feel, for this as well. And a lot of bits where you're working out how this connects into episode 4, and you're saying, oh, okay, this makes sense, like you've outlined there as well. But that's not the only thing we see on this episode. Once he you know, he speaks to Luke, we get him going out into the kind of out into the Dune Sea. But who else do we see? WH, who else turns up?
Oh, yeah, Qui-Gon Jinn. Liam Neeson returns as Qui-Gon Jinn, and it's great because it's like, oh, you know, you're finally here. And he's like, I've always been here. You just weren't ready to see me, because he was racked with guilt and self-doubt, and Qui-Gon felt he wasn't ready to appear before him. Now he's come to peace with what happened to Anakin and his part in it. He's come to peace that what his role is, and it's going to be as a Jedi, just not an overt Jedi, but he's, and so
Jedi,
he's ready.
Guardian, is that the term?
No. So like the levels of, like, that's kind of a role you get as a Jedi. In like, if you play the role playing games, these are things you can become a Jedi Paladin or a Jedi Guardian. It's, you know, it's like a being a fucking, you know, I'm a third stage wizard orc in Dungeons and Dragons or something.
I'm getting LARPs and Hawkeye type vibes here. But then as wrestling fans, I'm in no position ever.
So the three titles, official levels of being a Jedi are, you know, like, I guess youngling doesn't really count because you're not really fully indoctrinated into the system. But once you get indoctrinated into the system, it's Padawan. It's kind of sounding like Scientology almost. Padawan, Knight, and then Master. And then finally, Jedi Council. But you have to be a Master to be able to be on the Jedi Council. So Padawan wears the braid, that's a student, and then you get the braid taken off, and then you get the mullet, and then you're a Jedi Knight. And then you become a Jedi Master, and you're allowed to have a normal haircut, you know, whatever you want. So we see Qui-Gon, and we assume this is the part where, like, now he's going to teach Obi-Wan how to become part of the living force. I might have said the cosmic force last time. Qui-Gon is a practitioner of the living force, which is this is how he becomes part of the, you know, part of the force, becoming a force ghost. And this is a skill he is going to teach Obi-Wan, you assume. But I think you can do, if you want to do another series, you can set it just on Tatooine. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm. I'm all right with that. Anything on Tatooine is all good.
And you know what? Have him fight Jabba's crime gang. Why not? Just have a series where he fights a bunch of bounty hunters. Maybe young Boba Fett. Maybe Cad Bane. They fought, so it would not make any sense for Cad Bane to see him. Like, he would just squeal on him or something like that.
But bounty hunters, mate.
Bounty hunters. He could fight some bounty hunters surreptitiously without them knowing that he's a fucking Jedi. Like, maybe, you know, like in the comics, he fights Black Cranston, the Black Wookiee from Boba Fett in the comics. And, like, he gets away with it. It's like, you know, Cranston gets blinded early on by Obi-Wan, and then he's able to fight him a bit, and like he doesn't realize, oh, this is a Jedi or something like that. But use bounty hunters, use the Hutt cartel. There's so many things you don't need to involve Vader or the Empire in this, or excuse me, bring in Quinlan Voss and Asajj Ventress into this, second series. Why not? Like maybe Quinlan needs help on some mission deep in the outer edges of the Outer Rim, near wild space, the unknown regions. Okay, we can go have an adventure there. No one's gonna, and the Empire won't find out about me. There's so many possibilities you can do with the second series. Just don't include Vader. Include Luke. Don't include Leia. Just have it be separate from the main continuity, like a standalone adventure. Just Ewan McGregor, like going balls out with his fucking lightsaber in a situation where he's not going to be discovered by the Empire.
It's because I agree there. Actually, my only issue is obviously we've got Andor coming up. That's also set. Is it not? How many years after this we're probably talking? We're talking the period, depending, probably about sort of could be 10, 15, 20 years.
So,
or no, it'd be 8 years. So it's still in that kind of real time frame, isn't it?
It's going to be post Kenobi series.
Yeah.
I think. But apparently we're going to be looking at kind of the origin of Andor, Cassian Andor from like his.
I apologize. One, by the way. That's
yeah. Yeah. That he's how he becomes like a rebel. Like, and basically what the other like phrase that they like to throw around is insurgent, you know, how he becomes indoctrinated. And also like, you know, Mon Mothma seems like she's going to be a major character. So this is kind of like the formation of the hierarchy of the Rebel Alliance and how maybe the different cells start coming together to form the larger Rebel Alliance. Cause it's just basically a cell network of other people, groups of people, like, you know, committing acts of, you know, treason, insurgency, rebellion against the Empire at this time. And I mean, there's a lot of throwaway lines in Rogue One about Andor. He's like talking about like, I've done so many terrible things in the name of this rebellion, like assassinations, being a saboteur, maybe killing innocent people as collateral damage in his missions. So it'd be interesting. And they've said that they want to do two seasons of Andor, that they have enough material and they're confident in the reception of this, of the stories that they've written so far, that they can do two series leading up into Rogue One. So yeah, I'm excited about that. But if you want to do it in the same period, you just have to keep it divorced from the main storyline involving the Empire. Like, so yeah. Rebels is set before Rogue One, right? So this is, I would say Rebels is post Kenobi, pre Rogue One. So it would be probably around the same time as Andor.
It would make sense to introduce them, Quinlan Voss then. At that point in time. Oh, it's a fucking episode, this one, isn't it?
Between. It is. Apologize to all the listeners.
Oh, that's all right. But it is. I'll be fascinated to see where it comes from that. I mean, your overall thoughts on this as a series and, you know, because there's been a few highs and lows. I think when we started off, we were both kind of like, you know, it worked its way off quite slowly, I thought. And we accepted that. We thought, well, that's going to be the case. There's a lot of world building. You can see the similarities to kind of earlier episodes of the film series, of the prequels in particular. Then, as you say, we had our doubts around sort of episode four, certainly episode five. You're a lot unhappier about it than me, but did it win it? Did it pull it back by the time it came around onto episode six? I mean, you mentioned the other directions they can go in, and I think that's an important thing, is staying away from, it's going to may sound a bit weird, but staying away from Darth Vader, Luke, Leia, away from that you've got this expanded world that you can go into and you can tell some really interesting and new stories.
I would say, if you were to ask me a grade of this, like thumbs up, down, or in the middle, it's going to be in the middle, inching more up than down, just because like I did like the first three episodes of this series I liked the most of episode six. I think the downside for me is how they devolved the character of Reva. That's the, really the big, and just like the lazy writing of episode five, it prevents it from like being a thumbs up for me. But yeah, I'm curious if what else you could do with Obi-Wan. I just think you have it. The more you do that involves established characters, the more you're running the risk of devaluing things that happen in A New Hope. And I don't think we need to see that. The value of Obi-Wan as a character doesn't involve necessarily him ever interacting with those characters ever again. It involves him just being Obi-Wan Kenobi.
And I feel for this as well, that this is like of all of the things that of Ewan McGregor's, all of his portrayals of Obi-Wan Kenobi, I think this is the best. Like, I really do. I mean, I think there's things about those earlier, the prequels, and I think it's being directed by George Lucas. I don't think that's him. George Lucas is not an actor's director, is he? Whereas I think here, there's things here in terms of the level of performance as well, that I think that Deborah Chow was able to get out of him. And his, I think it's also him being in control a lot more of the character and what's going to be told with that story. And I think for Hayden Christensen as well, I think this will lead to a nice little mini career revival for him, even though he's not in this like a particular whole lot, certainly not like with his face. Well, we did mention it really on episode five. It's kind of top and tailed with the story about how Obi-Wan was able to defeat Anakin by using brains rather than brawn and anger and aggression. And it felt
That was a weird sequence, just because like
very odd.
Not so much for Ewan McGregor, because like, you know, it's okay. You can kind of buy that's him in that time period, but Hayden Christensen looks so old. much older.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to pretend that it's him like 35 years ago. Like, or however long, what the anniversary did they celebrate? 25 years, I think.
Yeah.
Right. That he's 25 years older than when he made that. He looks it. And it was really jarring for me to watch those sequences, like those flashback sequences. And he looks older. He doesn't look like the fresh faced person that he does in Attack of the Clones. So I understood the purpose of those sequences. I personally did not like them, to be honest with you. Because I just like one, the way Hayden Christensen looked, but also again, a little heavy handed.
Yeah.
You know, a little heavy handed, like the drawing the parallels. And I'm not a big fan of like this use of flashbacks to kind of like, oh, that what we're showing you in the flashback is going to lead to the main point of, or the climax, the dramatic climax of this episode. Nah, you don't have to do that. Like if you took that sequence out, this episode, like that, what they did in episode five would have been fine. So
it's too much of a sort of TV trope at this stage at times, being able to kind of show, well, actually this is the real motivations about how they're going to get out of this issue. But I mean, I have to say generally, I'm probably I found it as a piece of episodic TV that's going to tick the boxes for me as a Star Wars fan. It did that at the like overall. There was never a point on this where I had concerns and everything else, and I was glad with the final episode that I were able to turn it around. I look back on it and I think, okay, if they can look at this as like the template of how they're going to be making stuff on the way forward, but manage to kind of be more strict about the continuity process and really, really think through it. And I think that'll be probably the beauty with that, with Andor, is they won't have the kind of baggage that an Obi-Wan Kenobi series is always going to have in terms of the minutiae and how it plays into canon. And I don't think they need to worry. Like, they've got more leeway because there isn't the same sort of level of expectation with those characters as well. But yes, that's it. As we've come to the season finale, mate. I love doing this with you. We've decided we're going to be coming back and doing much more in the way of sort of film, popular culture, entertainment as well. I think hopefully if we can get back and have a look at go back and have a look at Rogue One as well.
Yes.
I think that would be a hell of a lot of fun. I think Rebels, because I think me going through there on a first watch would be great. And I think you feel it's criminally underrated.
Like, if we do Rebels, I don't think you should necessarily do episode reviews. I think maybe better you watch an entire season.
Yes.
And then I'll kind of like watch, you know, like my favorite episodes and then just kind of read the episode guides to it. And then that'll refresh my memory. I've watched Rebels like multiple times over the years since its release. And I think the last time I watched it, I did actually a whole series binge. I watched season 3 through 4 and I just absolutely loved it. Like it's Rebels, for people who've never seen it, it is everything you love about the original trilogy in the sense, like there's a hero ship, the Ghost, great ship, one of the best designs in Star Wars. You have a great pilot character in Hera Syndulla. You have a Jedi coupling of Kanan Jarrus and Ezra Bridger. You have a Mandalorian, Sabine Wren. You have like your big hulking alien characters, you know, member of the team in brain fart. What's his name again?
Allowed. You managed to know the worlds of several different properties.
You have a charming droid and Chopper, played by Dave Filoni. If you watch Rebels, you'll understand what I mean by played by Dave Filoni. Chopper does not talk at all, but he makes a lot of sounds, and Dave Filoni is the person who does all those sounds in the voice acting booth. But
he's more known
but yeah, like I would recommend you watch each season, and we'll talk about the season as a whole. I think that's probably a lot easier for all involved. I would be surprised, JP, you watch this entire thing in its entirety. Like if you come back to me, you tell me it's you don't like it, I would be absolutely shocked if you don't like it.
I can't see it happening, because I think you know that the kind of the tastes I have around this. So you're thinking, oh no, I need to have watched, I know why I wouldn't have watched it at that particular point.
Have your sons watched it?
They did. Now I don't know if they finished all of Rebels, because I think at that point in time that wasn't on Cartoon Network, was it? That was on
Disney XD,
and at that point in time I may not have had that, so I think there is a Rebels based hole there, which I to be honest, I think they will happily get on board with as well, because when I was doing the rewatch of the episode earlier today, they were like, oh yeah, going straight back into it again. So yeah, I think if it's an easy thing to go along and go, right, we're going to watch these for the next couple of weeks.
Once you get past like kind of what I call the X-Files effect of mission of the week, you know, of the early episodes, once you get into the larger picture of what the story they want to tell, and especially when you get into season 2, it just goes to a different level each season. And like, I like season 1 a lot, but it is very episode mission of the week, you know, like X-Files was monster of the week, or Buffy the Vampire Slayer was monster of the week, until we get to like the larger story that's being told in Buffy the Vampire Slayer from season 2 on. I feel that way about Rebels. Is like, it's enjoyable and you need it to lay the groundwork for the characters, but once you get to season 2, I like, and season 3 and 4, It's really fantastic. I'm gonna find out the name of this fucking character. Who is it? Where is he?
While you're doing it, I'll ask you one other question as well. Do you have any comic book recommendations? I suppose really as an overall recommendation, we'll say Star Wars Rebels.
Star Wars Rebels comic book
and
recommendation.
You mentioned Twilight of the Apprentice earlier on in terms of the specific episode with Ahsoka Tano, but. Do you have a comic book recommendation?
I've already recommended the Darth Vader comic book, right? The first volume. I would say I'm going to put links up for the entire series. Just read that series by the British writer Kieran Gillen. Just one of the best explorations of Darth Vader as a character. Also the introduction of Dr. Aphra. I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Aphra, JP.
No.
She's a Star Wars archaeologist, and she's very morally ambiguous. She's a great character. She's very fun to read about in this series. We also get introduced to the Triple Zero and BT something. These are two droids, and they are the diametric opposites of C-3PO and R2-D2 in that they love to torture and murder humans or all sentient beings. Yes. They are fascinating characters. Kieran Gillen is a great comic book writer in general. Go read like Once in Future and Die, the great, his own creator, own series. His Star Wars work is fucking amazing. And this Darth Vader series is one of the best things ever put out in Star Wars and comics. So I'll have links to, I'll just put the whole series up again, which is volume 1 through 4, I believe. It is an amazing, amazing story about Darth Vader, like as a whole. Like, so I think there's not so much Obi-Wan out there, but there's a lot of Vader comics out there. And a lot of them pretty good. So this series by Kieran Gillen is amazing. Like, if you start reading them, JP, you got to let me know what you think about Dr. Aphra. You know,
I'm looking already up on here in terms of,
Dr. Aphra is going to make like live action debut any minute. I feel she's going to make, I don't know in what timeline.
Season 2 of Book of Boba Fett.
I don't know what timeline, but it's got to happen. The person I would get to play, I already cast Dr. Aphra in my head. It's Janet from Kim's Convenience. You know, we've already got like, you know, Uppa, you know, the father from Kim's Convenience in Star Wars. Let's get his fucking daughter. Let's like Janet. I just have a brain fart about people's names. Andrea Bang. If Andrea Bang gets cast as Dr. Aphra, I'd be like, perfect. Because when I read Dr. Aphra now, like whenever I read a comic with her in it, I just think of Andrea Bang's voice in my head. So that's like, listen, if anyone from fucking Lucasfilm is listening to this, Andrea Bang as Dr. Aphra, fucking do it.
Well, do you know what? You're saying that now. I'm looking at Janet Kim and I'm thinking if Simu Lee's had a couple of great career moves wise, but it feels like, you know, needs to be spreading out the love to her, certainly.
Yeah.
She is great in Kim's Convenience.
She is. She's a very good actress. And like, Dr. Aphra is an Asian woman. Okay. She's clearly an Asian woman in the comics. Has to be played by an Asian woman. So get Andrea Bang. She'd be great. Janet Kim from fucking Kim's Convenience. Great TV show, by the way. Story of my life.
Awesome show.
I'm Janet. You put me on. I'm Janet, by the way. I'm not Jung, I'm fucking Janet because I'm the younger sibling. And like, I watch Convenience, like, oh
my
god.
Is your brother Jun then in that case?
Yeah, pretty much. No, not really, because he's pretty straight laced, whereas Jung is not straight laced. But I'm Andrea. I'm the one who like wants to rebel against what my parents want. You know, I'm the liberal in my family. So there you go.
Dangerous game in this day and age. I'm very much the liberal in my family, I can tell you. Well, certainly the family up north, the English side of the family, the Irish family, God knows how they feel with that. But as you've said, we've come to the end of this series. Like I say, we're going to be back doing other stuff between us in between as well. Like I say, I think the Rebels idea sounds like a great shout. Let us know, you know, when we put the episode out. You know,
except for the Carl Gack stuff, he just wants us to watch TJBW.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he's very much in on
Carl. You need to expand beyond TJBW to the world of like Seedling and Marvelous and Ice Ribbon.
It's a big Stardom show this weekend. They're all diving off cages and the rest.
That's right. Instead of doing a spot, good old Kaguma, she won the fucking match by diving onto all her teammates and escaping the cage. That's how you win a pro wrestling match. That's good psychology. None of this, I could win the match, but I'm going to do a spot instead. No, win the fucking match first, then do a spot afterwards if you want.
Exactly. Go out and then afterwards go, right, now still the theory got time. Now I've jumped down to the floor and done that. But yeah, we'll be back very soon. So that just leaves us just to finally say thank you all for listening and coming along with us. I'll be back on for Spotlight. We'll be back as a duo soon enough. So just leaves us just to say bye there.
Bye there.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.